The following podcast is intended for a mature audience. In this episode, there are descriptions of blood, sex, and violence, including a depiction of self-harm by a minor. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome, dear listener, to Echoes of Escheaton, a solo play Degenesis podcast that lets the dice rolls tell the story. You'll find the gripping narratives in this apocalyptic setting unfold before your very ears. You'll hear stories of loss and injustice, redemption and hope. A miasma of gloom drifts across the barren wastes, while nightmarish beasts roam and terrorize cities and settlements. Only mankind's inexhaustible will to survive offers the faintest glimmer of hope on the horizon. The echoing shades of the bygone peoples lingers on the wind and on the lips of survivors in this hell on earth. What stories will they tell? Twilight's glow was muddied with dust and dirt stirred up by the evening breezes that flowed across the city of Justician. A tarnished umber sky gave way to magenta clouds across the landscape as the sun dipped below the highest courthouses of Uptown and the judge's gargantuan armament factory, the steel monolith, adjacent to the forecourt. The last structure to be touched with waning sunlight was the Church of St. Samuel, its stout concrete walls absorbing the last bits of warmth before the night chill creeps in. Night, the cross quarter. The chronicler's loudspeaker announcement dismissing citizens from trade in the forecourt wavered across the low slate and clay rooftops of Banding Hill. Below, a massive silhouette moved under each awning of the shop stands. Two smaller silhouettes followed nimbly behind, careful not to stretch their gates too far into the street pole buzzlight and lit braziers that dotted street intersections. Isaac's forehead was slick with sweat, and stray locks of his blonde hair stuck to his skin. He pushed them back as he quickened his pace to keep a single file line behind his father and mother. All three moved with a practiced grace, muscles and nerves taut with anticipation. Nightbirds cawed and tittered to each other over the canvas awnings, giving Isaac a minor start. He could see better than he'd ever had at night with a freshly doused headband, almost as if the oils gave him an animal's sense. The trio passed a group of sickly beggars being rounded up by a single spitalian orderly. The orderly wore an unenthused look on her face regarding the after-hours cleaning and shots she'd have to administer, all to make sure these vagrants weren't spreading disease or spore infestation. Once the spitalian was out of sight, Uriah, Sarah, and Isaac rounded the last corner before laying eyes on Tinkret's bakery. It was a squared-off, dark brick building, with a rounded dome on the southern side topped with a chimney. The white smoke that poured forth from the bread furnace stack during the day had tapered into small wisps in the soft evening. The building was 13 by 10 meters, with a wooden addition on the front for customers and deliveries from the mill nearby. Uriah crossed the open street with his wife and son in tow, making a path for the abandoned grain cart for cover on the north side near the customer entrance of the bakery. The Anabaptist family stacked up neatly next to the spoked wheels of the cart, and Uriah peeked his head around the corner to spy through the small shop windows. Inside the bakery, wire-frame carts on wooden casters held dozens of loaves of middling bread to be given to the church and poor the next day. Only the freshest bread could be bought and traded for, while the stale loaves from the day prior were to be handed out for free as per Justician's city code. The inside was completely dark, except for the ambient streetlight that illuminated the baked goods in the front wooden countertop with a hinged flap, granting access to the back of the bakery.
"The inside looks clear. No sentries I can see on duty," Uriah said softly to Sarah.
Isaac saw his mother withdraw a tiny set of flat metal tools from her leather bodice and unfold them. Each tip had a different shape, like a hook, fork, and screw. She sidled up to the front bakery door and inserted two of the shapes into the keyhole, fidgeting with her hands all the while. Isaac and Uriah kept their eyes peeled for any passerbys who might want to linger too long, But alas, no one came as Sarah worked. After some quick handiwork with her lockpick, the handle loosened, and Sarah opened the door wide enough for her and Isaac to squeeze through. Uriah backed in, wary of any people passing who could foil their subterfuge. He needed almost every inch of the door's width to enter without knocking into the frame. The smell inside the bakery still lingered long after the fires had been put out in the earthenware oven. Scents of sesame and caraway spices hung heavy above each loaf, permeating the entire bakery. Aprons hung on hooks beside the counter, and large burlap bags were piled on top of one another, the seams straining under their own weight. Isaac swung up the countertop flap and held it for his parents as they progressed further inside. To the right were three large metal racks fastened to the floor, and each held wicker proofing baskets on each of its shelves. Dozens of dough balls were rolled each afternoon and set for an overnight rise using the residual heat from the oven filling the bake space. Three wooden tables stood empty next to the large oven opening, dusted with flour and spelt. Streaks and handprints from kneading dough and pounding it into shape dotted each baker's workbench. Some were dainty, feminine, while others were large and masculine. Sarah looked at the baker's ghostly imprints, a tinge of sadness on her face. She reached out and placed her hand gently into a print that looked roughly the size of hers. "The poisoned ground waits for an honest hand's work," she thought, before swiping the handprint away, showering the stained wooden floor with fine, powdery flour. Isaac stood watch at the counter while his father searched for clues next to the bread shelf racks. Uriah is looking for a bread shelf that lifts up to reveal a staircase. At least that is what he overheard in the attention horse from an unseen party. He will use his instinct plus perception pool to search for clues or things that stick out. Difficulty, 2 successes. Action number, 6 dice. Uriah held his hand up for Sarah to stop moving next to the tables and walked around each powdered footprint, careful not to confuse the tread on his boot with others commingled on the floor. One streak of flour stood out as it had been shuffled and dispersed to a bread rack in the corner of the wall. Uriah knelt down and wedged a huge paw underneath the wire frame of the bottom shelf, deflating the balls of dough as he rummaged around. He grabbed a corner lined with a solid metal plate and lifted up. The entire bread rack lifted up on hydraulic casters with a spring-loaded pivot, and swung out a bit so that it could be moved to the side. The bread shelf revealed a limestone set of stairs, reinforced with timbers that descended into pitch-black darkness. Uriah cautiously tested the steps with a heavy foot before descending a few steps further to try and peer through the darkness. Sarah and Isaac came up behind Uriah and looked down over his shoulder.
"Do either of you see anything further down?" Uriah whispered.
"Not in this light, or lack thereof," Sarah replied.
Isaac squinted his eyes. He could faintly make out the bottom of the steps some 5 to 6 meters down, and related in a hushed voice to his father.
"Two flights down, father. I think I see fabric at the foot of the stairs."
"Gather up and stick close. Sarah, you pull up the rear guard and be ready to run if we are overwhelmed. The other exit is the metal door to the right of the oven upstairs. They use it for dropping off wood to stoke the fire. Meet Simeon and the others outside."
Sarah acknowledged him and pulled out the slim stiletto she kept in her hip sheath strapped around a brown patched leather trousers. Uriah undid a water skin from his waist and passed it back towards Isaac.
"Redouse your headband, son. Let the waters of Parat wash over you."
Isaac took the container and felt light sloshes inside, only enough for one dose.
"Father, what about you?"
"I'll be fine. You will need your eyes fully open for your first proper taste of combat. Remember what Simeon taught you, and don't underestimate anybody you see."
Isaac popped the cork loose and shook some onto his cloth. He let the oil seep into his headband, sweeping his hair back once again and tying a fresh knot behind the crown of his head. The Anabaptist descended further into the darkness, feeling in front of them for handholds on the damp staircase. Uriah reached out and felt rough cloth drapes in front of him. He pushed several fingers through to peel back the veil.
A Are you looking for a D&D podcast with a dark side? Something more like Game of Thrones and less like Monty Python? Tale of the Manticore is part dark fantasy audio drama, part solo D&D RPG. There's no plot armor here. The dice make all the important decisions. Join me as I resurrect the excitement, wonder, and emotion of old-school D&D. Made for a mature audience, Tale of the Manticore is both a fiction and a game. It's the story where chaos rolls.
Uriah's eyes took in sights of carnal sins and heresy, fit for the flotsam, or apocalyptic pleasure houses in Justitian. 15 or so naked men and women, all adorned with Anabaptist forehead tattoos, lounged on dark cream and crimson throw pillows in dim candlelight. Thick rugs covered the stone floor, and a small altar at the south wall supported a copper bowl atop a black cloth table runner. Heretical imagery painted on the moss-covered walls depicted mutant aberrants in the wastes, swallowing babies whole, and swarms of cockroaches crawling from the Council of Emanations' open mouths. Those in attendance watched silk-covered dancers flaunt their bodies with hypnotic, sensual grace. Others were lost in tangles of arms and legs, pleasuring each other and moaning all the while. Uriah watched as a pallid young girl, wearing nothing but her undergarments and a tiara made of tiny bones, walked up the altar stairs, a vacant look upon her face. Scars from former cuts crisscrossed her arms as she held her wrist out over the copper bowl and slashed it, letting the heavy drops of blood drip into the bowl slowly and then more rapidly as she pressed on her veins. She grew misty-eyed and collapsed at the base of the wicked altar, crimson streams still pouring from her arms. A middle-aged bald man pulled himself off the other men and women with whom he was engaged in sexual congress and emptied a glass decanter of wine into the bowl, mixing the liquids together with a pewter goblet. He scooped a cupful from the bowl, its foul contents sloshing over the sides as he decried drunkenly.
Our cups runneth over. Raise your hearts and lungs to the Demiurge, from whom all cursed blessings flow.
The crowd cursed and howled in praise, lost in their lust. There were only three clothed members of the orgy below the bakery. Against the west wall, two men in leather armor glanced up occasionally at naked breasts and penises while they ran whetstones over their huge Anabaptist longswords, called Bidenhanders. The lengthy iron blades could skewer two men at once in the right hands. They groped and kissed the women that rubbed their necks. Uriah strained an ear past the curtain to listen as they talked.
Always a nice reprieve to be away from other pack members, eh, Josiah?
Too right, Ethan. Like as box is warm, but nothing beats a little fresh strange.
A third man leaned casually against an inverted tombstone bearing the insignia of the Broken Cross. Atop the cross and broken wheel was a huge skull and jawbone of a psychonaut. Seeing the head of Earth's plague, the spawn of damnation and sworn enemy of Rebus being praised in the night sent a large shiver down Uriah's spine. Isaac grew impatient and wanted to know what his father was seeing. He opened his mouth to whisper to Uriah to ask, but almost as if by instinct, Uriah held up a finger to silence his son. Sarah put a hand on his shoulder to steady him further as he gritted his teeth. Uriah shifted his weight to see more of the dark-haired man leaning against the sacrilegious artifact. He turned slowly, and Uriah could make out the features of Tancred, his mark. His leather cape dragged at his heels, and a dark blue turban on his head was slightly pulled back at the top to reveal a shaved patch of hairline. The crowd stirred and began grunting as Tancred pulled his own oil costrel from his belt and sloshed a cloudy, speckled liquid onto his head. Women appeared from either side to massage it into his scalp, and he began speaking over the cult mumblings.
Brothers, sisters, scions of Nio, our calling was to be in the fields of wheat, breaking our backs for the invalids and the hungry mouths which never give thanks in return.
No!
Our calling was to never defy a man like Rebus, who was weak, fleshy, with a soul as black as soot.
No!
Our calling is to prepare for the end of all things, to celebrate the new cycle of life that should have claimed the ground we stand upon 500 years hence. Our greatest gifts come from the Demiurge. We were too spoiled and sinful to know what it truly is. Burn our redemption and our salvation. These spores let us communicate with the one true divine.
The two women that flanked Tinkret stepped back as he gazed up at the fearsome-looking skull on the cross. He lifted a hand and stroked the jaw mandible gently as if petting a helpless animal.
The Demiurge speaks. We shall crack Rebus's bones, suck from the marrow, and grind the Neognosis to dust. Deliver your burn cusps to any empty hand that wants it. Help others to see the truth.
The crowd cheered madly as Tinkret spun around to face them, eyes wide and glassy. Uriah quickly withdrew from his spyhole in the curtain, certain that he wasn't spotted. That is, until he heard Tinkret laughing.
It seems as if we have a few uninitiated guests in our humble abode. A young man and the imposing figure of a man. Uriah the Drowner, I'm surprised I couldn't smell your drunken stink, but I see you.
Uriah furrowed his brow in frustration. How in God's name could he see his band through the curtains? It made no difference now, as they had been spotted. Sarah backed up two steps on the stairs. At least she hadn't been made out, and that could still work to their advantage. Uriah shut his eyes, inhaled deeply, and offered up a quick prayer for righteous victory during the pregnant pause. He turned and touched Isaac's cheek with his gloved mitt. Isaac smiled the same three-cornered grin that he had since he was a boy, now certainty replacing the boyish charm. The curtains were yanked briskly aside as Uriah and his battle brother Isaac stepped into the flickering candlelight.
Our lost cousin has returned as a prodigal son to his true family. A handful of my scions tell me of your heroic exploits on the battlefields of Pergar. Throwing children into rivers and swamps can be very heroic.
The crowd jeered at the memory. Uriah stood stock still.
Stands and says nothing. He doesn't even deny it. What a paragon of holiness he is. He probably cannot remember his liquored-up campaigns with the old fool, Zamuel. And now he is relegated to emptying the old man's piss-pots. Come, Uriah, be made new again at the foot of the Demiurge. Forsake this chambermaid fatherly role and give in to your real desires. Be in unity with us.
Tinkret gestured to the altar. A pair of women fondling themselves at the base. Uriah's eye twitched. The culmination of every old memory he's had over the past few days hit him like a runaway horse carriage. His hands, for the first time in his life, felt tired. Isaac shifted in his stance as he looked at his father. Something smelled foul in the air beyond the sense of copulation and tobacco. It smelled musty and spicy at the same time. The substance burn has been mentioned before when Uriah suspected it might be at the root of illegal trade within Tinkret's secret cadre. He couldn't have known that these fallen Anabaptists would be using it regularly in their celebrations of evil. Burn comes from fungal blooms gathered in sprawling spore fields far outside settlements and on the edge of inhospitable wilderness. The Spitalians spend their lives trying to sanitize the spore fields to keep burn from being harvested, but it is a never-ending battle, and some is bound to slip through the cracks. Once they're broken open, burn cusps produce spores that can be inhaled for various effects. For this episode, I'll rule that the spores are dense enough to permeate the air in the cellar, causing Uriah's mind to become clouded. He's recognized the effects before from his wartime experience, but it has been decades since he's trained his mind against such an ephemeral foe. He'll be rolling a psyche plus faith roll to try and resist the spores, coupled with the honeyed words of Tinkret and his haunting memories. I'll rule that the proximity of his family gives him an extra one dice, but it's no understatement that this is a critical roll for Uriah. Difficulty, 3 successes. Action number, 7 dice. Uriah finds his legs lumbering towards the altar, his mind reeling with a flood of emotions. He can see the pained faces of people he's driven his sword through in the battlefields. He hears the screams of the women as their mutant children, deemed unworthy to live, are wrestled from their clutches. He so longs to be rid of this burden of guilt that he's willing to seek refuge in the Demiurge. Even the protests from Isaac sound muted to his ears as he blinks slowly, marching past the fold of nude heretics on the ground. Isaac burned with rage. He took a step after his father and tugged on his huge bicep, only to be cast off. Tynkrit laughed at Isaac splayed out on the stone.
Patience, young one. Your turn will come, and there is plenty of room in the nest of the Demiurge. Keep breathing. In and out.
Although his father was twice as big as he was, Isaac knew pain still cut across all sizes and boundaries. He leapt to his feet and drew his sword, quick as a flash. He maneuvered around his father's left side and slashed upward, severing his father's two left fingers. Isaac fought back tears as his father roared in pain, grabbing his mangled hand.
Father, come back to us,
Isaac cried. Josiah and Ethan dropped their whetstones and pushed away the women. They were on their feet, brandishing their huge Bidenhander cleavers. Tynkrit drew his longsword too, as the mood in the chamber shifted from mocking to murderous.
There is nothing you can do to save your father. He has been lost for decades. You will join him in death and your souls will be forfeit to me, Scion Supreme.
Hey, Coop the GM here. The next episode is filled with nail-biting combat, and you can listen to the Sworn Duty finale right now. Thanks goes out to Tabletop Audio for 10-minute ambient soundscapes, and to my colleague and voice talent, the Pale Bird Max of the Ryan, who voiced Tynkrit in this episode. Engage with me on Twitter at @echoes_escheton to chat all things Degenesis, and if you like what you hear, leave me a rating on iTunes or Spotify to help boost the show. Many thanks to you all. I'm eternally grateful. Now, let's crack some skulls.